It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, The Truth. Well, down in Charlottesville, Virginia, the prosecution rested yesterday in the George Hughley first-degree murder trial. Covering that story for the Washington Times is Meredith Summers, and she joins me now. Hi, Meredith.
Hello.
All right, let's kind of set the story here. Now, Hughley is the guy accused of killing his former girlfriend by slamming her head against the wall several times back in May of 2010, right?
Yes, yeah, and it's crazy that it's been 2 years, but now the trial is going on, and they're saying it's going to take about 2 weeks. But the way things have been going, we could be looking into even next week because prosecution took so long to get through its witnesses.
Yeah. Let's start with the relationship between those two. What do we know? Was the relationship over?
Oh, the way that many witnesses and friends and family have described it, it was an on-again, off-again relationship, your typical college relationship where, you know, sometimes you're dating, sometimes you're not, but even more so because this was at a really nice college and it was a group, it was in a circle of athletes in lacrosse, no less. You know, it was very, very tight-knit group, and so they would argue there was a lot of alcohol, there was a lot of jealousy, there was a lot of infidelity. It's like a recipe for soap opera, but at this point, friends say that leading up, the months leading up to her death, they were much more rockier than they had been over the years.
Yeah. What did we learn yesterday that we didn't know already?
Oh, that's a good question. So yesterday, what we learned, they brought up, well, they being the prosecution, brought up several of Mr. Hughley's roommates and friends that had been with him the night of Yardley Love's death. And what they told the jury was that Mr. Hughley had lied to them. And because around midnight, which was when, give or take a few minutes, Yardley Love met up with George Hughley in her bedroom. And he came back a little bit after midnight, and his friend said, hey, where were you? And he said, oh, well, I was hanging out with two guys downstairs. And one of his friends said to the jury, he said, I knew he was lying because I had just talked to one of those friends, and he wasn't drunk. He was writing his paper, and the other guy wasn't even in the house. And he said, that's such a weird thing to lie about. And he was sitting on the couch, and he just had this weird, you know, far-off stare to his face. And I said, George, are you okay? And he said, yeah, nothing's wrong. And I kept asking him because I could definitely sense a change in, you know, his demeanor, and he just wouldn't even answer me. So it was pretty surprising for, you know, these really close friends of this guy to say he lied to us and, you know, and lied about his whereabouts, which, you know, we've learned was that he was with Yardley Love at the time.
Yeah. Alcohol, obviously, involved in all of this. We've heard that several times. He was reported to be drunk, but was she drunk as well?
She was clinically drunk. According to the toxicology report, she had a blood alcohol level of 0.14, but keep in mind this was taken hours after she had died. And so yesterday, during one of the defense's first witnesses, because the prosecution, like you said, went and rested yesterday, he, you know, did some fancy math, and of course the prosecution jumped up and was like, wait a minute, how do we know, you know, this is accurate? And he said at the time that she was last seen around 10 o'clock and then leading into midnight, she probably had a blood alcohol level of about 0.17, 0.18, which is obviously well over the legal limit of driving.
Sure.
And, you know, she had been pretty tipsy because she had been drinking that day, too. Not nearly as much as he had.
Yeah.
But quite enough that one of the defense witnesses, the toxicologist, had said at that point, you know, she has trouble making decisions. She might, you know, have trouble with her emotional control. And so I think that's what they were trying to allude to, is that she was just as, you know, not in her right mind as he was, almost
yeah.
Not to the extent that he was.
All right. Regarding the reason for death, we originally heard that it was blunt force trauma to the head, perhaps a broken neck, something like that. But wasn't there someone who refuted that yesterday or in the past couple of days?
Yeah, yesterday the defense brought up a neuropathologist, the guy who looks at brains after they've, you know, passed on. And he said, and of course, again, the prosecution jumped up and they're like, what are you talking about? He said, well, what happened was she suffocated into her pillow and she died, you know, because she couldn't breathe. And he said this whole idea that she had bleeding at the base of her brain, right where your brainstem is, which controls some of the most basic functions of, you know, a person breathing, staying conscious, that kind of thing. And so the prosecution had said, well, she had, you know, bleeding back there, and her brain could have twisted. They described it as a torque force, and, you know, like the brain swishing around because she had been getting strangled or was being smacked against the wall. And the defense, the witness, the doctor said, you know, I just didn't see any evidence of that. You know, there wasn't this severe trauma like you normally would see in someone who's had serious blunt force trauma. And he said, so he went into more about how she likely could have fallen asleep into her pillow, face down rather than on the side, maybe it's a combination of alcohol, and she suffocated. So they called it sort of like a crib death is how some people were referring to it.
Now, did they find marks on the wall where evidently he had, he's being accused of banging her head against the wall? Did they find any indication of that?
Well, see, that's what's interesting. During the prosecution's testimony, they said, one of the witnesses said, we didn't see any, they call them impact points, where you would have either seen an obvious indentation or there would have been a piece of hair stuck into the wall or blood or something. And the only spot they found was right above her bed, which would have, made sense because that's where she was found. But when one of the DNA experts tested it for blood, they didn't find anything on it. So there kind of goes that idea that he hit her against the wall multiple times. And during his taped interview with police taken 2 years ago when they played it to the jury last week, he said, I put my hand around her neck, but I didn't throw her against the wall and bang her head a bunch of times, like the prosecution has said. So unless, by some weird twist of fate, she nothing just showed up on the wall, that argument for the prosecution kind of has a couple holes in it now.
Yeah. Let's talk about the parents, family members. Are they in the courtroom? I can only assume they are.
Yeah. As far as Yardley Love's parents go, her dad passed away a couple years ago from prostate cancer, but her mom and her sister have been there every day, except her mom left for the autopsy report. I can't blame her. I mean, here's the mother having to listen, to her daughter's body being described in medical detail.
Yeah.
But her older sister's been there with her fiancé. Her older sister actually had to testify on her birthday, no less. And there's been family members, a lot of her old teammates and roommates have been there, partially because they're witnesses and also to just show support. And George Hughley's family has been there as well, although his mom and dad have had to remain out of the courtroom because they're witnesses. And the way they're doing it is if you're witnessing, you have to stay in a back room and come out one at a time. And once you've been dismissed, you can come and listen because the attorneys don't want any sort of bias or prejudice. The witnesses, if they've listened to someone else.
All right, so no interaction among the family members from one party to the other, then?
No, none that I've seen. And this is a very small courtroom. I mean, the pews are separated only by a small walkway in between. And, I mean, you can definitely I've been watching on a remote viewing location on a closed-circuit TV, and you can just see Yardley's mom and her sister just staring daggers over at George Hughley because he's sitting sort of up to the left of them. But the families they haven't arrived at the same time. They've been arriving sort of separately, but as, one whole group. Although, George Hughley's dad, he and his mom are divorced. George Hughley's dad has come in a couple times, like late by himself or left later after everybody else, but he's been around too.
Yeah. All right. So the defense, prepares and presents their case. Any idea of what their strategy is going to be? Do we have any hints?
Definitely going to see a couple more medical experts refuting everything that the prosecution's medical experts have said, and I'm sure we'll get to hear from George Hughley's family and friends as well. I'm imagining that the defense has a lot of other witnesses to call before them, but I don't think anything like the prosecution.
Okay.
They had about 40 people.
Okay. All right. Very good. We'll follow up with you. Thanks for joining me today, and again, we'll continue to follow it as we know you will. Thanks, Meredith.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.